Case 21-1100 and 21-1161, Amir Kaki, MD versus Tenet Healthcare Corporation et al. Oral argument, 15 minutes per side. Mr. Nelson for the appellants.
Good morning, Mr. Nelson. You may proceed.
Good morning, Your Honor. Matthew Nelson on behalf of all of the appellant defendants, and I've reserved 4 minutes for rebuttal.
Very well.
Your Honors, this is a somewhat interesting case in that it presents two separate issues that raise the question of whether an intervening U.S. Supreme Court decision has changed this court's public or the effect of this court's published precedent. First, that's true with regard to the federal question jurisdiction issue that's been raised, and then second, with regard to the manifest disregard standard for reviewing arbitration decisions. With regard to the federal question issue, the U.S. Supreme Court has decided to take up this very issue in the Badgerow case. That case has been argued. I had hoped that there was a possibility we'd have that decision on Monday. We obviously didn't receive it. We had earlier in this case made a motion to hold the case in abeyance pending the decision in that case, because if the Supreme Court there rules in favor of the petitioners, our position is, and I don't think it's contested, is that there would be no federal question jurisdiction here, and the court would have to address diversity jurisdiction. And we would continue to believe that abeyance is proper. But if the court does wish to proceed, I think its only option, based on its published decision in City of Detroit Pension Fund and in the Collins versus Blue Cross case, would be to determine that there is no federal question jurisdiction here, and therefore the court would be forced to turn to diversity jurisdiction. Should the court do that and turn to diversity jurisdiction, we would point out that
before you move on, I was checking the docket to see if you renewed your motion to hold it in abeyance before our merits panel. I know you filed that motion earlier, went to a motions panel to hold the case in abeyance, and I think it was denied without prejudice for us to decide, but it also specified without prejudice for renewing the motion. Did you renew the motion in front of us?
We did not file a renewed motion. We referenced the issue of holding the case in abeyance in the reply brief, and concluded that the court obviously would be aware of the situation. We are happy to file a renewed motion to hold the case in abeyance.
I'm not sure it's necessary. We're aware of the issue. I just wanted technically if it was before us or not. Okay. Very good. Go ahead.
And Your Honor, I would submit that it is within the court's jurisdiction or sure. discretion to manage its docket in that fashion.
Let's say that Badgerow comes out such that there's no federal question jurisdiction in our case or in this case. What is the basis for diversity jurisdiction?
Your Honor, we would submit there is no basis for diversity jurisdiction. The complaint here that was filed at the outset of all of this identified that both defendants Levy and Mallett are Michigan residents, and that DMC, or VHS of Michigan as it's technically called, but it goes under by the acronym DMC for Detroit Medical Center, has its principal place of business in Michigan, and that's correct. So based on the evidence that's actually properly before this court, which is the complaint and the allegations stated therein, there is not complete diversity. If the court
Mr. Nelson, on the diversity issue, since Tenet Healthcare is a defendant, and it's really, I guess, the operating company or the holding company for all of these others, would that provide a basis for diverse jurisdiction since it operates in many states and is not headquartered? Tenet is not headquartered in Detroit.
No, Your Honor, it would provide for diversity if Tenet was the only defendant, but the court would have to assess the headquarters of each of the defendants, including the subsidiaries here. And frankly, one of those subsidiaries is VHS of Michigan. And as I indicated, Dr. Kaki has already acknowledged that the principal place of business for that organization is, in fact, in Michigan. As frankly, I think logic would dictate as well. These are hospitals that operate only in Michigan and statutorily cannot operate outside of Michigan. But if the court were to proceed further down that road and say this issue has not been sufficiently developed such that it's necessary to go outside the record. We filed a motion to supplement the record, my colleague has attached some additional information that's not in the record in response to our motion to hold the case in abeyance. I think if you look at that evidence, you will see that there's corporate records, which are not a sufficient basis for determining diversity under Hertz. And then there's some arbitral testimony as well as a declaration that we've submitted from the head of DMC with regard to where the offices are located and where the officers are located. Sufficient, I believe, to establish that there is not diversity. Ultimately, however, if the court concludes that there has not been sufficient development with regard to the diversity issue, I suppose the court has the discretion to order a limited remand to the district court to make that factual determination. And I would submit that given that what we're talking about is whether or not there is jurisdiction to address the issues in the case at all, that ought to be done if the court is going to proceed in that fashion, that ought to be done before consideration of the merits of the issue, although admittedly that's somewhat inefficient.
Counsel, I wanted to ask you, your motion here is only to partially vacate the arbitration award?
That's correct, Your Honor.
Now, why would that not be the same as a request for modification of the award? And the reason I'm asking, I'm thinking maybe this really should be analyzed under Section 11 of the FAA.
Your Honor, we framed this issue at the time that we brought the motion to do so as a motion for partial vacatur. Excuse me, I always stumble over that word. I suppose the court could turn and address it under the separate standard, but of course no one has briefed it under that standard or addressed that standard up to this point.
Well, the reason I bring it up is if it really is a motion for modification under Section 11, I believe. We may have some case law in the Sixth Circuit that would foreclose you from arguing for the manifest disregard standard to apply to a motion for modification under Section 11. So I think it could make a big difference in your case.
Well, Your Honor, I believe that the effect of what we're looking for is, in fact, consistent with the relief of vacation and not modification, because modification is something that the federal courts do themselves. Vacator ultimately ends up returning the case to the arbitrator. Here, that's what we've been seeking with regard to specifically with regard to the incoherent portion of the decision. And then the
since you're not seeking though complete had to have the award completely vacated, wouldn't that sort of negate the argument that you're making now and put this in the modification classification rather than the vacatur classification?
Your Honor, I have to admit that I haven't, I'm going to confess ignorance here, that I haven't specifically thought about the issue in that context. It obviously hasn't been an issue that has been raised. I'm happy to submit a supplemental brief to address the issue, but I feel like I probably will dig myself further into a hole if I continue to discuss this without the opportunity to.
I respect your candor. Thank you.
With regard to the manifest disregard standard itself, if I may, in the remaining 2 minutes, I would point out that the manifest disregard standard is, in fact, the standard that this court has adopted in published decisions with regard to vacating arbitration awards, and that Vaden did not change, Hall Street did not change the effect of that. Although this court has said it's an open question, the court has fairly consistently applied the manifest disregard standard in a series of unpublished decisions.
Are any of those post Hall Street?
Yes, Your Honor. I believe that Marshall and Coffee Beanery, both of which we've cited, are post Hall Street. Most recently, there was an Eastern District decision called Bradley versus Fountain Blue Health and Rehabilitation Center that also concluded that this court has adopted the manifest disregard standard, citing to Judge Donald's decision in 2019 in Givens versus Optum RX. So all of those would be post Hall Street. And ultimately, this issue with regard to manifest disregard, we think is dictated by this court's published decisions before Hall Street. And that if the court is in fact going to get beyond the question of jurisdiction, that it is appropriate for the court to clarify that the manifest disregard standard remains. That is in fact consistent, we believe, with Section 10D of the FAA itself, which is the alternative that obviously the district court judge addressed this issue under. If that's not the case, then the position must be, as my colleague suggests, that there's only a procedural analysis with regard to arbitration awards, and arbitration itself is a lawless waste. Expediency is the only value, and complete disregard for the law, despite the fact that the parties have contracted for the application of the law, is allowable, and that simply cannot be the case. Unless the court has further questions, I'll reserve the balance of my time.
All right, you'll have your 4 minutes rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. Right,
let's hear from Ms. Gordon.
With the plaintiff. Good morning, all. I'd like to make a few general comments. This is an incredibly strong case on its merits. As a substantive matter, whether you use the FAA standards or if you use manifest disregard, defendants does not make a colorable claim that anything about this arbitration agreement should be set aside. And I will get into that in a moment. Having said that, you are facing some thorny issues having to do with legal technicalities. In particular, the standard of manifest disregard and the jurisdiction issue that's now cropped up since my client was ordered into arbitration well over 2 years ago. We are all clear that FAA expresses federal policy favoring arbitration. It's designed to be speedy, to get a result that's sustainable. This matter has been looked at twice now, Your Honors, before these exact issues came to you, other than the jurisdiction, because defendant did not raise jurisdiction at the district court or to the stay panel of judges Sutton, Cook, and Reeder.
I don't think that matters.
I agree. I'm just saying it's been looked at. I hear you. But they did specifically address, I mean, you think it doesn't matter, Your Honor, that they didn't raise it.
Correct.
I agree. But that's why it's just suddenly popping up in these briefs.
Yes.
With no, you know.
So you're arguing that there is diversity jurisdiction here?
That we decided to add a diversity claim once they raised it here.
And if I may, what's the basis of why there's diversity jurisdiction?
May I hold off on that just for a second? Because I've got another pitch sort of to make to you about how to handle this, and I'll swing back. So let me first address what we think this case should be handled. We do argue in our papers that manifest disregard should no longer be honored. It's moving in the direction, as you can see from Judge Sutton's argument, and you can see what's happening elsewhere in all the circuits.
But you say it should no longer be honored, but as a panel of this court, aren't we bound by our precedent? And even if I agreed with you that manifest disregard of the law is inconsistent with the statutory text, that it's a judicial exception that's inconsistent, would not our en banc court be the appropriate vehicle to overrule our precedent as opposed to this panel?
Yes, and I was going to go on, Judge Griffin, to say, judges Tarnow and Judges Sutton agreed it was an open question. I think if this court wanted to take this case to discard it, that's fine, but we're not asking you to do that. I don't care. My client is not anxious to continue on the appellate road here with en banc appeals. So we are asking you to analyze this case under manifest disregard. Your point is very well taken. And that's just where that stands. There's no way they can meet the manifest disregard standard. That's clear. And I will get into that in just a moment. with regard to jurisdiction and look through, which has now been argued at the Supreme Court in the Badgerow case, I do think that a handwriting is very much on the wall. If you follow the oral arguments there and the Supreme Court's questions, it does appear that look through with regard to this particular section is going to become the law. There's only two circuits that do not allow look through for this particular portion of the FAA. What we are asking you to do here for the reason to expedite.
So you're really hanging your hat on federal question jurisdiction, right?
Yes, both. But yes, I mean, Judge Bush, here's our thinking on this, given now that they've raised this at this point. I think this court should rule as a matter of law, and to your point, there are no published opinions post-Vadden, that there just are not from the circuit. These are unpublished opinions that continue to say it's an open question. I think this panel should say right now, and your precedent is that you are going to adopt the majority view of the look-through. And if the Supreme Court should overturn that, no harm, no foul. We will be the one and last case where you have announced that. But it will allow my client, Dr. Amir Kaki, who's been through an awful lot, to have his case heard and finalized once and for all. In U.S. v. Koch, this court proceeded to decide a circuit split issue, despite the fact that the Supreme Court was to hold oral argument the following week, following month, in a case expected to resolve a circuit split. There is no reason why this panel at this time cannot adopt the look-through, and it should. We briefed it significantly. The Supreme Court arguments were excellent. You can hear what the justices say, and it will dispose of this case, Your Honors.
We certainly can rule, even though the issue has been argued before the Supreme Court, was argued in November 2nd, but is it prudent to do so? I mean, is there a...
Yes.
Emergency? Is there some sort of a time that would make this like the exceptional case that it needs this expeditious ruling? I mean, what's the problem of waiting till June?
Well, that's certainly an option. But here's my thinking on this. There is no harm. I mean, this is going to look through is going to be the law, I believe. And even if I'm wrong, this court will have gone with the majority, at least in this point in time, and will allow this case to move through properly like so many others have. And there's no prejudice to the other side, Judge Griffin, because worst case scenario, this award will later be affirmed in state court. This is not a make it or break it. This award will be affirmed. We need to do it now. This court should not wait for Vadden, for Badgerow. It should now make the decision.
Why do we need to do it now? Why is that?
Because the case is pending in front of you, and the opinion may not be out for a while, and it would allow my client to finally move forward after over 2.5 years.
I mean, they're going to appeal. They're going to apply for cert. I mean, say we adopted your position and on the look through.
Yeah.
They're going to apply for cert anyway, so it's not going to be over. It's going to be pending in the Supreme Court.
In the meantime, the case will be decided in the Supreme Court. Listen, I take your point. I'm trying to come up with a practical solution for my client, and there's nothing to stop you from adopting look through.
Sure.
The law is very much there. Why not do it now and let Dr. Kaki move forward with his life? So that's my argument on that.
But Ms. Gordon, as Judge Griffin said, though, there's going to be little forward movement. And I think if we decide this now, it doesn't end and his expenses, the expense of this case continues to move forward because you have to then respond, except with another filing if the other side seeks cert, which they certainly will do. So it seems to me that your argument is really against the economies for both the court, your client, and your adversary.
I understood, Judge Donald. I'm trying to come up with a practical way for my client who's been waiting a long time. I think it could be done, but I take your point about granting cert. So let me move on. One other practical point I want to make, which the panel really needs to understand. Defendant really has only two key arguments under manifest disregard. And the two arguments are double recovery, which I'd like to cover in a moment, and then this so-called incoherent decision between HIPAA immunity and the award. I want you to know that as to double recovery, I think Judge Bush already pointed this out, defendant challenges only one thing. They don't like the fact that Amir Khaki got his medical staff privileges back. That's what they are seeking to vacate. Members of the panel, in 2 weeks, Dr. Khaki's one-year term of privileges that were reinstated is finished. Finished. This matter will become moot. The relief they are seeking is singular. That is all they are seeking, that Amir Khaki not get his 1 year back. And it's about to end. It'll be essentially moot by the time this court makes its ruling. Now I would like to move on to the issue of double recovery, if that's something
you want. Ms. Gordon, before you get into the merits of the arbitration,
sure.
I don't think you addressed the diversity question.
You are correct.
Okay, I think that's pretty important because if the Supreme Court ruled that there is no federal question jurisdiction, the only jurisdiction we could have is diversity. And tell me how your complaint alleges diversity of citizenship.
Okay, surely. As you know, when plaintiff and no defendant are citizens of the same state, we have diversity. How do we determine citizenship of the litigants? We have corporate entities here. As Judge Donald already noted, this is a completely a Tenet healthcare case. Everything that was done by Tenet out of Dallas. All the key players are out of Dallas. All the decision makers are out of Dallas. There are two nominal defendants who the arbitrator did not make an award against that defendant claims are Michigan employees. So Mr. Levy and Mr. Mallett are nominal parties, and those are the only individuals that have any connection to Michigan.
If they're nominal parties, why did your client sue them?
Well, the arbitrator decided they're nominal parties. We had a different theory. The arbitrator found that they were not liable. We had numerous defendants that we came after. They're only nominal, Your Honor, post-arbitration award. And that's what the law says, because there is, you know, there's no judgment against them. They have become nominal. They were not nominal pre-arbitration award. That's why we're calling them nominal, and that is in our papers. So with that,
Isn't diversity established when you file the complaint as opposed to later on, or?
Diversity is established at the time of the action of the case, and the action in the case is when we return to the federal court to have the award confirmed. Your Honor, that is our position, and the case law backs that up. So we do request that this court make a diversity ruling in our favor. We do not think a remand makes much sense under these circumstances. All right, let me move quickly forward. If you are concerned about the merits, obviously the manifest disregard standard is very difficult to reach. In fact, Judge Donald covered all this very well in the Gibbons case in 2019. Mere error in interpretation or application of the law is insufficient. The decision must fly in the face of clearly established legal precedent. I've just got a few minutes left, and I do want, if you don't have any concerns about this, please let me know. But this double recovery thing is, defendants are utterly wrong on it, have mischaracterized the law and the facts. So I do want to cover the double recovery piece with you, if I may. So, there is no double recovery. There are two separate injuries in this matter, separated by fact and by time. On October 1, 2018, Dr. Khaki was fired from his directorship and all on-call agreements. That was an employment relationship. He had a contract. He received specifically allocated money. This was all paid directly by the DMC. That was taken away from him. He was not reinstated to that job. Hence, he had lost back wages and lost future wages with regard to his employment arrangement with the DMC of directorship and on-call agreements. The arbitrator awarded that to him. Then, months later, his medical staff privileges in April 2019 were taken away. That is injury number two. So understand this. The directorship leadership positions whereby he could get referrals, made referrals, have an exceeding successful DMC practice were pulled, but he was allowed to remain in the building and see patients. How do you make money? DMC doesn't pay you. Defendant acknowledges that. You have to do it on your own. You have to get patients in the door. You have to bill. The majority of Dr. Kaki's money, and this is in an exhibit that we have attached. It's in the defendant's appendix. It's, I think, 361. It's a red and green bar chart. If you look at this document, you will see that the majority, Dr. Kaki worked at other hospitals. The vast majority of his income came from billing, from seeing patients at the DMC. So he now gets his privileges back. Now what? You've been fired. There's been media publicity and you're walking in the door. Your referring physicians have moved on to refer to other people. You're starting from scratch. There's no guaranteed income. The arbitrator totally understood this. Hence, she allowed reinstatement for 1 year only for medical staff privileges. After that, he's on his own. But with that came no income. And he had to build it. And the arbitrator took that into account. She did not give him what he had been earning out of the DMC, which is in that chart, appendix 361. She gave him a smaller portion. So those are two separate injuries. There is no clear standard of law anywhere that would meet the manifest disregard standard as to this double recovery. It's a catchphrase. There's all different ways that an arbitrator can award damages, and they have not shown in any manner that this arbitrator, this flew in the face of reality or what this arbitrator should have done. Defendants have not articulated, Your Honors, what legal principle they use these vague catch terms as to both of their theories, double recovery, and then an incoherent decision. There is no statute that says any of this. And as to the double recovery, they rely essentially on employment cases. Agreed, if you are an employee and you are fired from a $50,000 a year job and the court reinstates you and you get your $50,000 a year back right away and the jury gave you that $50,000, that is double recovery. That did not happen here. Not remotely did that happen here.
Okay. Any further questions, Judge Donald, Judge Bush?
No.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Gordon, for your arguments. Mr. Nelson, you have 4 minutes rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. Let me start with the issue of the federal question. Here, if the court is going to take the invitation offered by my colleague to decide the federal question issue now, the court, this panel, I believe, is bound by the City of Detroit Pension Fund case to conclude it does not have federal jurisdiction. The court can't speculate federal question jurisdiction. The court can't speculate based on perceptions of how oral argument went in the Supreme Court to overturn binding precedent in a published decision from this court. Consequently, the only decision that the court could make at this point with regard to the federal question issue is there is no federal question jurisdiction. So in terms of the approach here, I continue to believe that waiting to decide this until after Badgero is the best course of action. With regard to diversity jurisdiction, if the court wants to reach that issue, I think, Judge Griffin, in answer to your question with regard to when is diversity assessed, in this context, because the complaint was filed in what is essentially a separate action for purposes of the FAA, because the case was dismissed at the time that the case was sent to arbitration, the motion to confirm, the time to assess diversity is the time the motion to confirm the award was filed. And at that time, there were no nominal parties. Conrad Mallett and John Levy, both Michigan residents, undisputedly so, had an interest in having an award that found that they were not liable confirmed. That result was in their favor. That was not nominal as to them. Furthermore, there is an admission from the defendants here as to where VHS is located. And I've talked about that already. I won't reiterate that. But with regard to this idea that everything and everyone happened in Dallas, that was asserted a few moments ago, there's no evidence in the record of that. This court can't make, obviously, a decision with regard to diversity. It doesn't make decisions with regard to diversity by assessing evidence. That's what it sends it back to the district court for. And there is no evidence in the record from which to make that conclusion. In fact, as indicated before, the case law is very clear. The court needs to make an assessment as to the citizenship of each corporate entity that's being sued, and not just the sort of, well, tenant is the parent company, therefore everyone has the same citizenship as tenant. Turning finally to this this question of double recovery, I believe that this is set forth fairly well in the briefing. There is a twist on the argument that was made here this morning that, in fact, that there isn't a double recovery if you both have the privileges and earn the money and are paid for the money that you're being earned. We submit just as a matter of fact that that's not accurate, and there is no way to read the arbitration decision here is anything but a double recovery, and that the court specifically acknowledged the fact that it could not award both front pay and reinstatement, and then proceeded to do just that, which is the definition of manifest disregard. Unless the court has any further questions, I'll cede the balance of my time.
Judge Donald, Judge Bush, any further questions? All right. Thank you very much, Mr. Nelson, for your arguments, and Ms. Gordon for your arguments as well. Case will be submitted. I believe that concludes the oral argument docket this morning. If so, you may adjourn the court.
Thank you, Honorable Court is now adjourned.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you.